Please listen carefully.
Well, hello, universe. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
And I'm Summers McKay.
And we're part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media, social media, and the direction of your day to one focused on solutions.
7 days a week, you can count on us to publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now, as we've been doing for a really, really long time, we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, home office-worthy, 5 days a week-worthy podcast. Today is Monday, August 24th, 2020.
Happy Monday, Summers. And I guess, you know, we started this in the before time. We had no idea of what it would turn into in terms of our daily check-in with each other and with the Optimist Daily, our daily sort of run through analysis of what's going on in the world from the Optimist Daily lens. It really has turned into an anchor point for me in this odd world that we are currently living in, this liminal period that we're in right now.
When you just said the before time, I was like, yeah, before Corona, BC. Sorry if I'm unintentionally offending anyone who has a different meaning of time, but BC, and then I guess what would after quarantine, AQ?
We don't really know what after quarantine will look
like.
So we're in purgatory, Summers, to take your unintended
metaphor. So Christy and I were checking in a little bit this morning, and as always, just discussing our weekends and how we were feeling, and I am feeling better. I know everybody knows I was pretty down the end of last week after some pretty tremendous losses in my family as far as homes. The wildfires in California continue to rage. Northern California is really under siege, and just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people have lost their homes. Christy, what was the number of displaced people?
I didn't look this morning, but I think an article I read over the weekend was like 120,000 people have been evacuated. I don't know where that stands today.
It's really sad. I personally am processing it a bit better. My cousin and her family continue to be safe, and their GoFundMe is just going gangbusters. It's really, really lovely to see the extraordinary generosity, including from team members on the Optimist Daily. Y'all made me cry. Thank you for that. And I am looking ahead to my own quarantine transition this weekend. I'm going to be taking Thursday and Friday off because I'm going to take the baby, and she and I are going to go stay at my parents' house for a few days and give it a try of being in a different location, because I realize that I have this huge amount of anxiety about going anywhere or doing anything. And Brennan and I really have been stuck here since March. I know that a lot of people are feeling that.
You're talking about some of the anxiety that was coming up for you over being in a new setting. And I think that that's pretty common. I had to renew a professional license last week, so I had to spend some time in a conference room. It was very large, lots of socially distant space, but it was the most direct exposure I've had into the world since March when we started working from home and sort of shut down. And it definitely made me anxious. Even though everybody had masks on and it was massive conference room, and I went outside as much as I possibly could. I did not sit for the long parts of the seminar. I just sort of spent outside and then came in for the actual licensing test that I had to do. Anyway, I understand that. And then other friends of mine who have, for whatever reason, had to move around or travel. I don't know, Amelia, when she was traveling, I think it just leads to anxiety. You get used to something and the world still doesn't feel settled. And so you unsettle yourself even further. And there's some trepidation there. So I think that it makes sense for you to feel that trepidation. And if you think about all these people who are now out of their homes because of the fires, and then there's a couple of hurricanes coming up into the Gulf Coast of Louisiana this week, those kinds of events are always scary and always unsettling. And in the context that we're living in now, this quarantine purgatory that we're in, it's even worse. Do you stay and keep safe from the virus, or do you leave and keep safe from the fires?
Right. Well, and I had an interesting experience over the weekend. On Saturday, we diverted from our normal walking route. My socially distant lawn party and I decided to walk around the pier area in Ventura. And we went relatively early in the morning. There's a very famous surfer break up there called Surfer's Point. And I realized that there is a lot of disparity between those people for whom quarantine and protection against coronavirus is something that is salient and concerning, and then those people for whom it is not. As we were walking, I found myself getting very, very tense and very uncomfortable because the cars that were sort of lined up with all the people and surfers hanging out in the back of their cars right up against the boardwalk, and nobody was wearing a mask. And, you know, I ended up just pushing the baby and kind of jogging through that area because it just felt very, it felt like we were in two different worlds. And certainly we know that there are a lot of people with different perspectives right now, and everybody's kind of coping with this in a different way. And so I think some of the anxiety about going out in the world is recognizing that not everybody thinks or acts like we do. For me, I think it's going to be really good for Brennan and I to just go be somewhere else for a few days to know that we can, and that there are safe places, other places than just my little house.
Your backyard with your multiple PlayStations set up. Exactly. For Brennan.
My little baby jails that I put her in. I have all these different little containment devices for our child. She's a runner. She's ready to dash. So well, speaking of containment devices, this is going to count as the most awkward transition to Optimist Daily Stories ever. But what are we talking about today?
I think we decided we're going to talk some trash today, Summers.
Let's talk trash.
Well,
so what I liked about this story, I'll read you the headline. 20 years on, the world's biggest trash dump is now a green oasis, from the environment section of the Optimist Daily. A trash dump in Staten Island, known as Fresh Kills, was in its heyday one of the world's greatest eyesores. Mounds of trash literally 20 stories high. Imagine that times three. That's pretty much how bad it was. By the late 1970s, 28,000 tons of trash arrived at Fresh Kills every day. And guess what? 20 years later, a massive green park now sits where it used to be. What is really compelling about this story is the way that innovators, a organization called James Corner Field Operations, Mr. Corner and his team, became restoration biologists, jumpstarting a framework and leaving the ecology of the site to finish things up. They did some very basic things as far as covering the millions of tons of garbage with soil and then planting native grasses, then allowing the grasses to then seed the soil, then introducing goats and other animals, you know, that would continue to fertilize and enhance the area. And then planting trees themselves, but then allowing seed spreading birds to join in the effort. The images are absolutely gorgeous. And the value of this story, I think, is in understanding that regeneration is possible, that these big trash dumps and waste sites that have a negative impact can be regenerated. I know that there was a story about a deforestation area. I believe it was in Costa Rica. Basically, it was just this barren, barren land. And the way that it was restored was simply by dumping orange waste, right? Orange peels.
Yeah, it was sun-kissed. Or they got all the leftovers from orange juice producers and just dumped it into the denuded forest land. And 10 years later, it's a vibrant, vibrant tropical forest again.
Yeah.
Similarly, I think John Liu, who's a soil ecologist and restoration eco-hero, he's documented how in the lowest plain of China, they went in and systematically regenerated this farmland. The soil had been dead for a couple of generations, and they went in by adding organic waste to the soil and just organic matter. It changes with the ability to absorb water, and it's amazing how quickly a whole landscape can turn around. The thing I like in this story, how it likens Mr. Corner and his team to restoration biologists, even though they are landscape architects. And what they did with this landscape was really help it transform by setting it up for the ecology to do the work, nature to do its work in restoring this site.
Well, and really believing in the power of nature. For those of you who had the opportunity to hear our interview with Ethan Steinberg on Friday, understanding and honoring the power of nature to restore, you know, and recognizing that we can work in tandem. It's sort of like these enormous composting projects. And really, that's what the orange waste, you know, orange juice waste was, is it was just a huge composting project and letting nature take its course and letting what is a more natural way of Earth's reclaiming and rebuilding is working with it and helping it along. So this story is fantastic. It definitely has some great visuals. And I know that there are a lot of waste sites all over the world that are looking for solutions. And we will continue to generate waste. Hopefully, we will continue to generate less and less waste. Today's trash day at my house. It pains me how much trash we put out, but hopefully we can continue to reduce our waste and then reclaim these sites so that they become more lovely places for the earth.
Speaking of using nature to leverage recycling or cleaning up waste, the story that I wanted to highlight, the headline is, UK will start using bacteria to extract precious metals from e-waste from the environment. This is definitely a tongue-twisting headline. When you say extract precious metals all in one word really fast, try to do that a bunch of times really fast and you'll see what happens to you. They're using bacterial agents to help separate some of the precious metals which live in our e-waste. And we all know that as sort of planned obsolescence took over the evolution of technology, we have tons of e-waste every year. In fact, according to a recent report by the UN, the world dumps at least $10 billion worth of gold, platinum, and other precious metals into a growing mountain of e-waste every year. If you think about the metal that is in the microchips that are in your cell phones and the batteries and the televisions and the, I mean, all of this precious metals, and you only maybe have a tiny fraction in every single piece of electronic, but it adds up. It adds up in a tremendous level. And trying to figure out how to make it more cost-effective and simpler to reuse and recycle the metals which are in the waste products, which otherwise just sit into a landfill, or I don't know what would happen to it, but extracting those precious metals from electronic waste instead of having to go in and mine virgin metals from the natural resource which are out there. And usually those are in areas of the world that do not have a lot of other infrastructure. Again, you get into the social justice of that. Social justice and environmental justice are very closely linked, as we all are coming to really think about in a more visceral kind of way. I just really love this because what they're doing, it's a project led by a New Zealand company called Mint Innovation. It's a startup set up in 2016, and they wanted to develop a biorefinery that combines hydrometallurgy and biotechnology to safely extract metals, which include gold, palladium, silver, copper, from e-waste. And what they are interested in doing is creating a low-cost, greener process through which these metals can be extracted. Right now, they use cyanide and other massively toxic chemicals in the process of trying to extract these metals from e-waste. So they're looking for ways to use less toxic. And in order to do that, they are using bacteria.
They're using bacteria that's not naturally occurring bacteria, but it is designed bacteria that has a reduction in the CO2, water, other waste, the impact the cyanide previously would have on this process.
Great story. I know that new ways of recycling metals in batteries and in other electronics are starting to be developed. I know of a company in the Bay Area that's going to be opening up in the next year or two that will be the first US-based battery extractor, you know, where they're recycling batteries and the materials in batteries so they can be reused in future electronics.
So all throughout our house, when Brennan was born, my husband and I had this like constant battle regarding temperature in the house of whether it was too hot or too cold for the baby. And so I just decided to solve it by buying these cheapo little thermometers, little digital thermometers. It was like a 5-pack that I placed all throughout our downstairs living area. And it's funny because they're like 7 feet apart from one another, right? There's no need for that many, but it came as a pack of 5. But through this most recent heat wave and the amount of humidity, all of the batteries in all of them have died. over the weekend, I was looking at them and I now have, you know, 5 thermometers and, you know, humidity monitors that are pretty much useless unless I replace all the batteries. And of course, they make it sort of hard to replace the batteries because they'd rather you just toss the whole thing. But I did manage to get one open and identify the battery that needed to be replaced. But it is, as I was talking about my own trash, right, and chucking things, it breaks my heart that these batteries, and I know most people don't recycle their batteries. Most people, even though they should do something different with their batteries end up in the trash cans on local trash pickup day. Amelia and I were talking about this last week with regards to the refill shops. This process and how we treat metal waste and battery waste, we need to come up with consumer changing behavior as well as technologies to adjust how people behave, right? Like the technologies to support recycling, but then also making it easy for consumers to get their batteries to these people. It is kind of an architectural design change, and it is that nothing happens in a silo. So again, young people, if you are looking for careers, how we deal with e-waste and how we deal with metal waste and how we deal with batteries is a huge area of growth. And that is going to be a do good, do well business in the future.
Absolutely. And actually, if you think about coming up with creative uses for things that are currently considered waste, is going to be a technology and an industry in the future. I've had experience repurposing used generators and repackaging and rebuilding. You talk about your husband who likes to restore old cars. I mean, there is definitely a way of rethinking what is currently considered waste and extracting the stuff that we can use and figuring out how to make waste not something that we think about, because throwing stuff away and just putting it in a pile and, okay, you know, 20 years from now, it might be a beautiful mountain in upstate New York, but there's going to be a better way of looking at things and lowering our impact and actually figure out how to also stop mining virgin materials and just try to figure out how to use what we have at hand.
Speaking of reducing waste and reducing use, you talked last week about natural gas, and we shared the article about that natural gas has a lot of risks. And actually, I think there was another natural gas pipeline explosion over the weekend. I did something that I feel super proud of, is that I turned off the pilot light that goes to our natural gas fireplace. We have in one of Brennan's many little caged play areas, a fireplace that I put a big trunk in front of because the glass was always hot. And even though the fireplace was off, it never cooled down. My uncle pointed out to me, said, "Summers, just turn off the pilot light. And one, you won't be using the natural gas from it. And two, I guess saving something like $6 a month on our gas bill." So look around your house right now. If there is somewhere, if there's a pilot light you can turn out, if you have a natural gas fireplace, just turn it off. You don't need it right now. I felt like that was my contribution in a way to both my bottom line as well as reducing our footprint of natural gas usage this weekend.
I'm giving you a virtual high five right now.
Yay! What else do we have on the Optimist Daily today?
Quick read through of our other top 10 headlines from today. There's a headline, "Could we 3D print buildings using local soil instead of concrete?"
"From fertility to diabetes, 6 ways smartphones can help track health." "Google rolls out new real-time wildfire boundary maps." I know a lot of people for whom that would be of value. "These health tips will help you boost your child's immune system."
The thing about that article is that it's really good advice for everybody. So I think it's a great article to read through.
I was going to say, and for all who are children at heart as well.
Exactly.
Yay, baby zebras. Conservation Center celebrates birth of 4 endangered zebra foals.
Oh, that's the other thing that happened this weekend, Summers, is the panda in the National Zoo gave birth.
I know. And hearing that little baby panda squawk was the cutest thing.
Cute. I know.
"The future of greenhouse technology may be tinted solar panels." And in Italy, they're offering $600 subsidy to those wanting to buy a bike. Yet another reason we should go to Italy. And last but not least, this university's rooftop is home to one of Asia's largest organic farms. This is a pretty good day on the Optimist Daily today, as always. Looking like some great solutions, definitely worth sharing with friends and family if you guys need a boost. Thank you guys all for listening to today's Monday morning version of Tongue Twister Optimist Daily Update. We promise to continue to share positive solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure it is changed for the good. We promise to cover current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
And please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com. And for just $5 a month, you can support reader-funded independent journalism and be a part of the solution-changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset. Let's keep The Optimist Daily free for all who need it, supported by those who can. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here today. And we will be back tomorrow with more solutions.